We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know. LeBron, what's your decision?
In this fall, man, this is very tough. In this fall, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach and join the Miami Heat.
It's been 10 years. You believe that? I think officially next week. What is it? 7th, 8th, 9th? Yeah, next week. I don't even know. What is the date? I swear. Sometimes I think it's July. Sometimes I'm like, oh, wait, no, it's June. That is the 10-year anniversary. I know exactly where I was. I was with my girlfriend at the time. She's now my wife. And we're out getting ice cream or something, like a Cold Stone maybe, in Wicker Park when we lived over there. And we were airing it live on the Score. I'm like, I'm not going inside. I have to hear this, and I have to hear this news live. I have to know what happens. I'm going to be mad, but I just want to hear the announcement live. And exactly what I expected. Jordan, you were like 3 years old. Do you remember where you were during the decision?
That's funny. I was 16, and I was actually umpiring a baseball game with my brother at the time. So I was behind home plate, and we were constantly checking our phones in between innings. And then right before the inning starts, somebody comes over the announcing booth and just says, LeBron James is not coming to Chicago. And that was heartbreaking. That was the start of the true heartbreak as
tough.
A Bulls fan.
It's very tough. It's very tough. But you didn't really think that John Paxson was going to land him, did you?
I think I was more shocked that Bosch and Wade both went with him. I thought they were going to come to the Bulls, and I thought one of them was going to come to the Bulls and break it up. I didn't think all three were going to go there.
Okay, so I saw this this morning, and it is worth your time. Brian Windhorst obviously put a lot of sweat into this article, but it is really, really good. Your headline, 3 days in July, the high-stakes maneuvers that assembled LeBron, Wade, and Bosch. Instead of reading all night here, figured why don't we bring you some audio? So we got three different chunks from the Hoops Collective podcast. My big takeaway from all of this, and I was a cynical Bulls fan / media member at the time, my takeaway was the Bulls were a lot closer than anybody else thought. Like, they were right there. Miami's won. Bulls were a real close second, even though a lot of us never felt they were going to hit the home run because they never seemed to be able to accomplish that. They were right there. They really seemed like they were. All right, here is Nick Friedel on the Hoops Collective podcast reflecting on the Bulls' perspective early on in the hunt.
Wade and Bosch had interest in playing in Chicago. How much interest? I don't know. But, I mean, you lived through that. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of it, what are your memories from and just the things that you've talked to people about over the years that you think about that?
Well, to me, the story and the conversation starts with Chris Bosch, because you talk to people in that Bulls organization, including former players. Chris Bosch, he was coming to the Bulls straight up. Chris Bosch and the Bulls were supposed to be together, at least in Chicago's mind. And then as that week played out, as I know you get into in the story, they went, oh, what's happening here? But as far as the Bulls were concerned, they felt like they had a commitment, at least some people in the organization did, from Chris Bosh. They felt like Dwayne Wade would follow. They hoped that that would work out, especially as the days continued into that first weekend. And then to see everything kind of fall apart in that fashion and see all three of the big guns go to Miami the way they did, frankly, I still don't think the Bulls are all the way over it. I mean, the storyline with the Bulls always will be, always, is Derrick Rose got hurt and it changed the course of the franchise. But I can just tell you, living through it, that there are still people in that organization that have not gotten over all the different things that happened that summer.
John Paxson, still with the organization, by the way. They thought they had Bosh, and then they would get Wade. What, and then LeBron was going to follow them? Is that the idea? I mean, just take that for what it is, right? Just listen to that process. Okay, we got Bosh. We got the third piece. Yeah, what about one? What about LeBron? Because those guys, we know now, because we find out that they formed the big three, and that's the way basketball changed. I mean, Jordan, as you're listening to that, don't you think it's kind of funny? Like, oh, they had Bosh. They thought Wade was going to follow Bosh. Like, okay, really? And then you were going to get LeBron because you had Wade and Bosh? And Rose, I guess? And Noah?
I think the original plan was just get two of the three, right? And they felt like, yes, at that time, and I felt like we were convinced.
Nobody was talking about all of them going to the same place, right? I'm trying to remember.
Right. No, you're totally right. You're spot on. And a lot of the NBA's philosophy was building a big two. And this was really the first of the big three that we saw. And we had no idea this was being planned. So we were in the back of our heads like, okay, we don't get the number one prize in LeBron. At least Wade and Bosh are coming here with Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah. Let's get fired up. We can beat any team that LeBron has. And
yeah, it's not Boozer. It's a lot better than Boozer. The Booze Cruise. Yeah, I'm kind of laughing because we know how it played out and what happened, and John Paxson's still upset about it. And in every interview he does, he brings up Derrick Rose getting hurt 10 years ago. We're still talking about the decision. But I do love stuff like this. I totally missed it. Was it a true documentary that was on last night? You saw some of it, Jordan. What was it?
Yeah, it was like it was a 30 for 30, but I felt like it was
set. It was.
I felt
I
like
didn't
it was
see
set
it
up
on my DVR.
It was more, and you know what? A lot of people, I think, forgot about it either, or it didn't get as much promotion as some of these others that they've been releasing.
Yeah.
But it was good. It was like a storyline with a lot of interviews intermixed. It wasn't traditional in a sense, but it was still good for a lot of people that may have forgotten about it.
Okay, I'll go back and definitely watch it. Listen to the Hoops Collective podcast here, breaking down the first day of meetings in Chicago. You know, it's just funny because now I'm flashing back and I remember the video of Dwayne Wade outside the hotel and the reaction with a lot of Chicago sports fans was like, oh yeah, that's cute. Wade is really nice. I'm the Chicago guy. Yeah, I really want to play for the Bulls. But people felt like, yeah, does he really want to? Or he played the Bulls. Anyways, here's the guys breaking down the first day of meetings.
Meanwhile, in Chicago on the first day, Wade and Bosh are both in Chicago. Their agent, Henry Thomas, who has passed away but played a huge role in this, was based in Chicago. And so Wade and Bosh came to Chicago, even though neither of them, you know, are from or Wade's from Chicago, but neither are based in Chicago at that point. But, you know, huge home court advantage for the Bulls. They're in town. So the Bulls meet with Wade and Bosh the same day. Wade comes up first, and it's at the United Center, and Wade, the Bulls are not convinced that Wade is ever going to leave the Heat. And so they have this full presentation ready for Bosh, this full presentation ready for LeBron, but they only give Wade like 40% of it because they thought he was going to take that and immediately go to the Heat and give them the Heat, his strategy. They didn't trust that he was truly a free agent. Nick, did you feel at the time that anybody really thought that Wade actually wanted to come to Chicago. I'm talking about like at the start of this.
No, if you go back in time, B, it was exactly as you just described. Well, let's see what happens with Dwayne. But the focus early on was Chris Bosh. And of course, the focus was always going to be on LeBron. I mean, like early, early on in the process. And going back in time, I was just looking through some of my notes. The Bulls made these iPads individualized for each player. And they had a member of their staff deliver them that first night of July 1.
Yeah.
And for Bulls fans, who delivered Chris Bosh's iPad to him in Texas? That would be my man Chuck Swirsky, a longtime play-by-play guy for the Bulls who knew Bosh dating back to his days in Toronto. But the point was, in those first hours, that first day or two, it's exactly what you described. LeBron was it.
Can I say, like, the iPads came in, like, a metal case, like you would give somebody a case full of money in and they had like these really
all
super is that gonna win you over, is like a really impressive iPad? But I mean, I guess it was something, right?
They were ahead
you
of
can't have
time.
A Hello Kitty case, I mean, like...
and for people that are trying to figure out what this looked like, what we're trying to describe, when you go to a restaurant and you see a restaurant have a menu that's suited for what have to offer. That's what the Bulls were trying to sell in that moment. It had lists of schools for the players that had kids. It had tips about the city. I know you get into, there were pitches from Oprah. I mean, yeah. Man, there were all kinds of different layers to each player's iPad. And the Bulls took a lot of pride in the time and the work that their media department put into those pitches, because any question they felt like any free agent had would be answered by hitting a button. But the point is, in that moment, the feeling was, let's get Bosh. Maybe he can sway Wade, and then who knows what can happen with LeBron. But early on, and this ties back to what we said at the beginning, there was such a feeling of Chris Bosh is coming to Chicago, and at least we have that first domino that we need.
I love this stuff so much. Hold on. It was hard to concentrate anything my guy Nick Friedel had to say. One time a score intern has gone on to way bigger and better things. Chuck Swirsky delivered the iPad to Chris Bosh?
Wow.
I couldn't. Jordan, I assume my microphone was down when that was airing. Did I or did I not lose it when I heard that for the first time?
Yes. Yeah. And I said, I reacted the same exact way the first time I heard it too. I was like, because wait, what?
I never heard that before. That is awesome.
So he's got some swag.
By the way, great piece in the Sun Times on Chuck Swirsky, voice of the Bulls right here on 670 The Score. Did not know that he delivered the iPad to Chris Bosh. And Nick's stressing, they thought they had Bosh. They really thought they had Bosh. Man. Before we got to the Swirsk part, the Bulls didn't trust Wade. And then years later, they go and bring Wade back for the final goodbye to the rest of the NBA. Bulls fans were still mad at the time when they paid Wade. Because Bulls fans didn't trust him. The Bulls did not trust Wade. Only 40% of the presentation. So they're always wondering, well, if we gave the whole thing, if we gave him the whole plan, would Wade be in? Maybe they were right, because he was never leaving anyways. He was never going to leave Wade County. Okay, here's the last chunk. Take a listen to this couple minutes about Wade asking for the second meeting. I think where you were at the time when that came out, speaking for myself, I remember thinking, that's crap. That's not real. That's for show. That's for the headlines on ESPN. All right, I want to hear what they have to say.
Going back to Cleveland. So Avery has got a good read for this kind of stuff. So anyway, that night, the Heat fly to Cleveland because they're getting ready to pitch LeBron the next day. The the velvet bag. Bosch said it looked like a Crown Royal bag that Riley was carrying his rings in. Henry Thomas, Wade's agent, calls the Bulls and says, hey, Dwayne wants another meeting tomorrow. Nick, do you remember, you know, what do you remember about this where the Bulls weren't even sure Wade was serious? Next thing you know, they want a sec. They're feeling good about Bosch because whatever was said. And now they get a call from Wade. Hey, let's have another meeting tomorrow.
There was that weekend, that first weekend, and there was a feeling certainly in Chicago that all of a sudden Bosch and Wade were on the way. And I can still remember turning on SportsCenter, you're talking to people in the organization, you're going, is this thing really going to happen? Are they going to land Bosch and Wade? Is this the moment in time? And there was about a 48-hour stretch there where the Bulls, already confident in what they felt like they had heard from Bosch, went, whoa, are we going to be able to pair Dwayne Wade, Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Taj Gibson, Chris Bosh together? And B, I know you get deep into this in the piece, but to me, this is where the Bulls had two things working against them in the moment, aside from the fact that, as we learn much later, all three guys wanted to play together. One, Tom Thibodeau had just become coach of the Bulls. So while he had a great reputation around the league, and certainly these guys have all spoke glowingly over time about being able to talk basketball with him and the X's and O's, he wasn't Tibbs yet on a bigger platform. He hadn't developed that kind of head coaching reputation. And secondly, and most importantly to me, is the Derrick Rose factor. And Derrick famously in those years said, I'm rolling with Keith. Talking about Keith Bogans. Because he was so loyal to Keith Bogans. I mean, people still laugh, but that is why Derrick Rose, if I could describe why Derrick Rose was so beloved in one story for his teammates, not just Keith Bogans, is because he was so incredibly loyal to the guys on his team and the guys he believed in. And he said, I'm rolling with Keith. And again, to this day, because this summer was so, so important on so many levels, the Bulls officials and the people that lived it, they always wonder if Derrick had taken more of the center stage approach in the recruiting aspect of things, would that have changed what ultimately happened?
Nope. Oh, did you have to play that part?
And he said, I'm rolling with Keith.
Rolling with Keith. Not LeBron. Not Wade. Not Bosch. I'm rolling with Keith.
And he said, I'm rolling with Keith.
Okay, this extensive piece on ESPN.com. Jordan Malley, I'm going to take a wild stab and guess that your favorite part was on decision day. I guess each team had one more pitch and the Bulls went last. According to the piece, it was a Saturday afternoon. No, was it? Okay, so this is not decision day, right? The Saturday before?
Correct.
Okay. It was a Saturday afternoon of a holiday weekend, and their group had forgotten to book a car from the hotel. They arrived, talking about the Bulls, at the IMG building in taxis, but didn't know to enter through the garage. They were stuck waiting on the street with the door locked.
That is correct.
So that was your favorite part? Not that Chris Bosh still has one of Pat Riley's rings?
That is so bizarre, too. Yeah. Man, so many thoughts ran through my head, but that was my favorite part. It hurts my heart as a Bulls fan, especially as a young Bulls fan, to think. And we were so pumped, too. I remember talking to buddies in high school every single day, like, this is going to be it. That Derrick Rose is going to turn this franchise around and the assistance of some of these stars. And to get that heartbreak in the summer, it was like, well, all right, now let's go against him. But then we know what happens after that.
And then people just were mad about everything. Then they hated Wade for a while, the local guy. Then, you know what? The decision was the worst thing ever. What? Because he didn't pick your team? Is that why it was terrible?
I was very, very angry for a long
time. I was angry, too. And when they came out, I remember I was on the air. I want to say it was the Friday night. And they had the smoke and the live cameras covering the celebration, not four, not five, not six. Ooh, I was really mad. That was brutal, man. Yeah, I want to say that was a Friday, if memory serves. I'm at the station watching that happen live on primetime television. I was not happy.
The one thing I push back on that he says is like two critical pieces to this is that Thibs didn't have any experience. You mean to tell me Spoelstra's 2 years in Miami as being head coach was enough to tip the scales and was enough for Wade to basically convince two other stars?
Don't we know by now? Like, we go nuts over Jim Boylan, but for these superstar players, and they're going to go somewhere, where's head coach on their ranking? Do they give a damn about the head coach? Does it matter?
Does it matter? Not a whole lot.
No, they're going to get paid and they're going to win rings. It doesn't matter who the head coach is.
Especially if you're LeBron's caliber or Wade in their prime or even Bosh in his prime. But man, that was the thing. I always thought Bosh was going to come here no matter what. And I think that was the true stab in the heart, even though LeBron was kind of an outside shot and Wade would have been great. But I was really convinced that Bosh was coming here regardless of anything.
Yeah. And then you get nothing. I don't know. That was the double gut punch. Well, when the two of them popped, I think they were on PTI when Bosh and Wade showed up, and was it the afternoon or the day before when they showed up together?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that with Michael Wilbon. And they called Wilbon to set it up too, by the way. This story, I know it was really bad for our team, the Bulls here, but I love stuff like this. Like this. This is so good because we didn't know what was truly happening behind the scenes. There were a lot of ideas, but we didn't know. We just think, oh, the Bulls, you know, went down their leg again when they were trying to get a superstar. That's the biggest reason they made changes to the front office, because they could never land the superstar. And then there's a Derrick Rose factor, which I hate to relive as well. If you want to chime in, you can text or call 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. Also coming up, want to get more into Cam Newton to the Patriots at 7:40 from overthecap.com. Brad Spielberger will join me. He's a Bears fan, and he loves to break down these markets. I want to talk about the quarterback market and how it played out and where the Bears fit in. Joe Osho, 670, The Score, and the Radio.com app.
And this fall, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach.
And he said, I'm rolling with Keith.
You're listening to The Joe Osho on 670, The Score.
You can text or call 312-644-6767. Some of the reaction coming on in from the 708. Wade is hated because he came off as a spy for Pat Riley in 2010. Right or wrong, that's how it appeared, so he teased the Bulls. Well, maybe it was right. Maybe Wade was never leaving Wade County. And we hassle the Bulls for a lot over the last decade, and we should criticize them for a lot, even though, let's point it out, that the Bulls were in this conversation because they drafted well at the time, because they had Derrick Rose, a superstar, on a rookie contract, Taj Gibson as well, Joakim Noah there, and the thing is, were they going to be able to trade Luol Deng's contract away and then get all of those guys there? But, you know, why? And I get it. So if that's the truth, maybe they found out that was not the truth, or they believed what Dwayne Wade said. And then years later, that's why they decided to overpay him when they said it's time to get younger and more athletic. Younger, more athletic. Dwayne Wade, Rajon Rondo. Younger and more athletic.
But we did want to get younger, and we do want to get more athletic.
So I'm convinced that's when they said, okay, Gar, let's stop with the talking in public. You don't like doing it. You're not very good at it. People like PAX. They like Johnny Jump Shot. How about you stop talking? Because you don't tell the truth anyways. It's just lie after lie after lie. And there was another
lie.
Like That was the one that got Gar, right? That people kept pointing to and laughing.
They've been in this building.
I would 100% agree with you.
Younger, more athletic, younger, more athletic. Rondo and Wade, let's go. Hey, by the way, they are advancing in the postseason if Rondo stays healthy, but that's what you get when you get an older guy. There's a chance for injuries there. There is. But I love stuff like that, finding out what was going on behind the scenes. See, Jordan, you kind of said you felt like, I didn't watch it yet, but you felt like you didn't learn a lot. Maybe that's the case, but just, I don't know if they covered this in the piece on that aired on TV. I think we learned about how much the Bulls thought they were in on Bosch, man. Like, it sounded like they thought he was a 100% shot right there in their mind.
So I'll compare it to how you kind of went through The Last Dance, or a lot of people did. They said they learned some stuff from the documentary, but it was everything around it, the stories that were coming out after the fact.
And did they talk about Jim Gray?
Yes. Yes, yes. Wait.
What?
Jim Gray, the football announcer.
Hosting the decision on ESPN, a company he didn't work for.
That I don't recall. I don't remember that. But no.
I guess he was LeBron's guy, or he had some in. I forgot exactly.
I'm not surprised. He's buddies with Tom Brady now. So, like, the two biggest guys, it makes sense.
Man, that guy finds a way for the superstars, the biggest stars of the game, to love him. Hey, good for him. I can't knock that hustle. That's a reason he still has jobs. He's friends with Tom Brady, friends with LeBron James, I think. I forgot what the whole backstory was. I just thought it was odd that, okay, wait, you've got Wade and Bosch making their announcement on PTI with Michael Wilbon, one of your employees, but here comes Jim Gray. I'm like, wait, I don't understand. I don't know what's going on.
I think that was part of the criticism, too, is like they should have just
dragged it out, man.
And they should have just let, I think somebody said they should have just let Wilbon host it. I think that was the original plan. They didn't go into too much detail in the actual doc about that, though.
Okay. Still, yeah. Stuff we don't know a lot about what went on behind the scenes. I feel like we're all healed now, right? We're better, so we can kind of talk about it, kind of hear the backstory.
Wrong.
I'm interested in it. Yeah.
I'm not healed.
You're not healed yet? 10 years? You're still... I mean, LeBron's at the near the end. Wade's done.
I appreciate LeBron way more than I did 10 years ago when I was a Bulls fan, but... I'm still not healed from that, and then everything that followed the 2 years after. I think a lot of Bulls fans my age aren't either, because we didn't get to really experience Jordan firsthand, like the generation above us.
Yeah.
Like, even your age, you were a teenager, early 20s in Jordan era.
Yeah, so I was able to appreciate it. I don't remember much. I don't remember much of Jordan in the 80s, but at least I got the 90s. You didn't get any of that, so you missed out. So this was going to be your time. And you had the MVP, you had Rose, and it could have been a lot of titles, and it wasn't. There's a lot of different reasons. Are you mad? See, okay, so the prime of you growing up as a Bulls fan was, I'd assume, is Derrick Rose. Are you mad at Rose for not recruiting?
I was at the time.
Or pushing against it as well. Not just not doing it, but just being like, no, rolling with Keith. That's kind of like, that's not my job.
And he said, I'm rolling with Keith.
I was at the time, honestly. And for a while I was.
And that was how the league, that's how things happen in the league.
But then I started to hear the more stories. You hear it from Derek's side and the guys that were close to him too. Even in Derek's documentary in last April that dropped on Stadium, you read his book. They talk about it over and over again. And it wasn't about necessarily not wanting to recruit. Mm-hmm. It was, he trusted his guys so much that I think that bonded those guys together even more so, despite talent, despite anything like that. He said, I'm going to ride and die with my guys, and that's how it's going to be. And he felt like if guys didn't want to come here in Chicago and play with me, then why do I need to go out there and convince them that they should?
Right. I'm sure if he were to go back, if he had another chance at that.
He did make a video, though. Nobody talks about that. Yeah. He did make a video that he sent to LeBron, Bosch, and
Wade. But nothing in person, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. He did make a video. I would love to see that. That's not been out, right? We haven't seen that?
No.
It's like probably a 5-second soundbite. Let's be honest. All right. So
and he said, I'm rolling with Keith.
Cam Newton, now a New England Patriot. So now we've seen the entire quarterback market. The carousel has played out. Free agents, trades like the one with the Bulls. Around the Bulls, I'm there still. Like the one with the Bears and the Jacksonville Jaguars for Nick Foles. I want to talk about how the quarterback market played out and how COVID-19 is going to impact the 2020 NFL season. Brad Spielberger from Over the Cap and Pro Football Focus will join me next. This is Joe Ostrowski on 670 The Score and the Radio.com app.
Paul Zipser, who we're high on.
You're listening to The Joe O Show on 670 The Score.
All right, I gave you an update at 6 o'clock. It's 7:42. Apparently, we're in a similar spot. We're still they're working on the air conditioning. So hopefully I'll have it by the time this show ends. Joe Ostrowski with you, Sports Radio 670, The Score. So Cam Newton signs with New England the incentive-laden contract. That's what we kept hearing. Incentive-laden contract for Cam Newton. And I want to talk about this with Brad Spielberger. He's a big Bears fan. He works for OverTheCap.com. And congratulations, Brad. Man, things are happening for you. Now you're an employee of Pro Football Focus, and you also made the move from New Orleans over to New York. How you doing, man?
Hey, Joe. Doing well. Thanks for having me on after my couple big moves. I hope the AC gets fixed by you. Sounds like it's getting hot over there. Living in Queens now, and started working with PFF recently, so working on a lot of exciting stuff.
Excellent. Brad joins me on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Shop over 500 new and used vehicles at Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. And you can follow Brad on Twitter at BradOTC, at BradOTC. Always has some great NFL content, including a heavy slant to the Bears, the team that he follows the closest as a fan there. Let's talk about this quarterback market and how it all played out. We had a lot of conversations early on in the year trying to figure out how everything was going to go, which guys are the Bears targeting, and we obviously know what they did. But just let's branch out. It doesn't only have to be about Foles. We'll get there. As far as players and fit, which teams jump out as the winners and the losers in this quarterback carousel?
Yeah, so it was probably one of the more, a lot of depth at QB in this offseason. Obviously in the draft, four first-rounders, but also a solid amount of both free agents as well as guys that it was obvious were available for trade, obviously Nick Foles being one of those players. Honestly, from a 2020 on-field perspective, I have no problem saying that Nick Foles might be the best fit, but that obviously was the plan that obviously was catered. You know, every move they made this offseason, it kind of suggested that they were going to find a West Coast quarterback to run their version of an offense. They signed, I think, 800 different offensive coordinators or QB coaches that all either worked with Nick Foles or had lunch with Nick Foles or something to do with Nick Foles.
Yes.
So, the connection there is strong, and I have no reason to think that they're not going to do well there. But obviously, when you get into a conversation with the whole market, maybe a different story on how you look at the value of each move.
Okay, here's where I'm going to push back because I get so sick of he knows the system. He knows the system. And I know that this is a very different situation dealing with the pandemic, and these guys cannot meet in person, or they haven't so far, and everything's going over Zoom. But when I hear, well, he's the best option for the Bears, he knows the system, and I think, well, there are more talented quarterbacks out there. If people are going to die on the system hill, my thinking is, well, what does that say about Matt Nagy? Because I don't care what sport you're talking about, the best coaches cater their system to the players on the field.
Yeah, so I couldn't agree more there. It really is. It's the better coaches take their player skills and kind of make the scheme work for that, whereas other coaches, basically try to put a round peg in a round peg in a square hole, so to speak, and force certain players to kind of fit what they like to do. The best coaches, the coaches that are going to win year after year, are the ones that adapt. That is, inarguable in my opinion. And I think that this Nick Foles move, both for Nagy and also just for Pace in general, speaks to kind of the structural issue that is they're obsessed with getting their guy. It's played out in so many different areas. This may have been the culmination of they just get so attached to a certain player, whether it's in the draft or in the free agent market, and they're obsessed with beating. I talked about this earlier today, but they're obsessed with beating the prior year version of the Bears. Like Ryan Pace in 2020 wants to beat the 2019 Bears roster, and I think teams like the Patriots, like you mentioned, they want to beat 31 other teams at roster construction.
I love that. I was actually going to bring your tweet up earlier from this morning, just talking about that. There are two types of NFL GMs, and I kind of see and I hear fans repeating a lot of that stuff. Like, okay, now the Bears are good because they're better than last year. Like, I get it. I see the upgrades on the roster, and the Bears will tell you they made all these great upgrades on the coaching staff as well. I see the upgrades, but it also doesn't mean they're going to win the North or be a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, I'm with you there. You know, I think that as all offseason I've kind of expressed that, you know, I am pessimistic long term. But that's not necessarily saying I don't think they're going to be good in 2020. In fact, I really do think they have a chance. You know, I think there's the probability, I'll be honest, that they're picking first overall. I think that is a possibility. But I also do think there's a chance with a couple bad injuries. I don't even think it's crazy to say. But I also, on the same vein, I do think there's a probability of them, you know, making maybe the NFC divisional round game. You know, if Foles stays healthy and plays well, and if kind of everything goes right. But that's just 2020. And for me, and a lot of people that try to kind of map out how to build a roster, it should never be catered to a single season. You know, unless I think that also fans get comfortable with it. You're seeing the Brady, you know, Buccaneers situation, the Saints, Drew Brees, and the Colts, Rivers. You only do that when you have basically a surefire Hall of Famer quarterback. Then you can do that. When you have Nick Foles and Mitch Trubisky, you should probably be thinking long term.
Why weren't they interested in any of those names you just mentioned?
You know, I'm not sure if they weren't interested. Couldn't tell you either way. I do think that, again, you can make cap room for any player. I get that. And teams can always find a way to make it work. Brady called them up, you know, and said, hey, I want to be a Chicago Bear. I'm sure they would have found a way to finesse it. But, again, I think they really were kind of deadlocked on their guy. You know, I think that they probably knew they weren't going to compete with some of these other teams that had more resources and were kind of better positioned to maximize. I mean, to be honest, for Brady, I mean, if you look at the offensive lines of teams he was looking at, Bears is probably near the bottom. I mean, the Bears' receiving weapons are okay, but it's basically Allen Robinson by himself versus he's got Godwin and Mike Evans in Tampa. It's not really a hard decision for him.
Joe Ostrowski with Brad Spielberger. Follow him on Twitter at BradOTC. Does work for Pro Football Focus and OverTheCap.com. Hindsight, always 2020. Like, we didn't know what was going to happen, that Cam Newton, Jameis Winston, and Andy Dalton with all these cheap deals, that these guys would have all these min deals and just incentive-laden contracts. But with the hindsight that we have, what would you have liked to see the Bears do with the position?
Sure. So I say this a lot as well. I try not to be a kind of a hindsight analyst. You can always look at things in retrospect and, you know, make yourself into a genius. So the issue isn't so much with the specific move they made. And I get that they didn't want to sit back and let their guy get taken away. There were legitimate rumors from Mike Garoppolo that there was a chance that Nick Foles was going to go to the Colts. Which didn't really make sense to me. I think Rivers had already ended that point, and they obviously have Jacoby Brissett on the roster. But whatever the case may be, there were legitimate threats that, you know, maybe Foles was going to go elsewhere, and they weren't comfortable with the other guys. But it just goes back to the general philosophy of you have to trust that you can sit back in a kind of a flooded market. I mean, we talked about a lot of guys, Teddy, Cam, Marcus Mariota, Nick Foles, Case Keenum, Andy Dalton, Jameis Winston. I'm not saying any of these guys are world beaters, but this is a group of, you know, 7-8 guys that you can let one fall to you and make it work. And instead, they had to go out and get their guy like they always seem to do.
I probably shouldn't worry about QB3 much because it's pretty much a waste of time. But I'm still bothered by the fact that they didn't take a swing at all in the draft. And why are you bringing back Bray? By the way, Bray, not making much less than some of these names we've been talking about.
It's a great point. Yeah, no, at this point, he is not, although he's now going to be, you know, practice squad eligible with the new rules. But I also was confused why they didn't take a late round or even undrafted free agent shot. Just get a guy in camp, see what he's made of. Know who Tyler Bray is. I don't think he's going to, you know, break out at any anytime soon.
Okay, let's talk about the 2020 season instead of pile out of the Bears, because we could do that all day. The pandemic, we find out earlier tonight, just a couple of hours ago, state of Arizona, one of the states to open up fairly early here. Now they're kind of shutting everything back down, and training camp is supposed to start in 29 days. So we don't even know if there's going to be a training camp, or if there is, how much there's going to be, or how many preseason games. But looking at the Bears, and then you could branch out to the rest of the league, what sort of impact is the pandemic going to have?
Yeah, so, you know, like you said, about a month away from training camp now. Obviously, it seems like all these guys are still working out with each other, you know, kind of remotely for the time being. But it definitely makes things difficult for teams with a lot of turnover, teams with maybe expecting to have a lot of rookie contributions. And obviously, you know, you mentioned Nick Foles. You know, I do think he's comfortable with, like I said, all the coaches that he's all worked with. But he's obviously, you know, never thrown a ball to any of these receivers. So it is probably going to have, I would guess, it's going to make the first couple weeks pretty sloppy. I expect them to chop the preseason down to probably two games, if not even less, maybe one preseason game, which, you know, normally wouldn't really affect the Bears. But obviously, we know Nagy now wants to get some reps in preseason. You know, kind of shift from his ideology a bit there. But yeah, so I really think it's going to just impact. I think teams are going to have to simplify things. And I think coaching may matter more than it ever has before, because you're going to have to get all the guys on the same page of different ages, different experience levels, and really just less time, less, you know, face-to-face time to get all this stuff done. So it's going to be a cerebral season for sure.
What about the holdouts in the NFC North? You have Dalvin Cook up in Minnesota. Jamal Adams says he's holding out. He doesn't want to play there. How's that going to play out?
Yeah, so the holdouts for guys like Jamal Adams and Dalvin Cook that only have three accrued seasons at this point is pretty tough. So the new CBA, the rule there is if those two guys don't report on the first day of training camp, then they're ineligible to accrue a season. And what that means is those two players would then be restricted free agents at the end of 2020. So they would have three accrued seasons still. And they basically, you know, the Vikings and the Jets could just slap on an RFA tag, you know, an original round RFA tender on these players because they, you know, technically would be RFAs. So I think holdouts from third year or guys going into their fourth year are kind of, you know, it's a lot more posturing than real threat. Because they don't really have much leverage there at all. So I expect the guys to show up. I don't think either gets traded. You know, Adams obviously more likely, I think, to get traded. But I think teams are realizing around the league that you probably don't want to trade a bunch of draft capital and then pay a guy. You know, maybe trade a guy that already has his extension or something like that. But to take on a Jamal Adams and then make him, you know, probably give up a first and maybe a third and then give him the highest paid, you know, safety contract in the NFL – I think teams are realizing it's just not a good value move.
Too bad the Bears didn't draft him in 2017. Imagine that, the safety position at number three overall. As a guy that studies the cap and how certain teams handle it, are there a couple of teams or general managers that impress you time and time again? And are there a couple that really confound you?
Yeah, I mean, no question. I talked about this the other day, but there are different strategies, and a lot of teams have their own way of doing it. And so in my opinion, I think as long as you stick to your convictions and you always stick to the way you do it, then you're not going to run into trouble. Some teams that are kind of all over the place and kind of bounce back and forth on ideologies, you know, can run into trouble. But yeah, so anyways, the teams that I'm kind of looking at and learning from, I would say the Ravens, the 49ers, the Vikings, and of course the gold standard, the Patriots. Those are probably the four where I just know that their front office, you know, they've been there for a while and they just have a keen understanding of finding value, doing things differently. You know, they like to zag when everyone else zigs. And they just continue to outperform in certain areas. And I think it's because they understand the randomness and the variance that is football. They're never trying to compete for one single season. They're never trying to be short-sighted or compete with themselves. They're always kind of gauging the rest of the league and kind of reacting to what everyone else does, mm-hmm. you know, as opposed to looking inward all the time. I don't want to really, like, you know, rag on a team or say that I don't, you know, appreciate how they go about their business, but I guess I would say that, you know, I try to pick different strategies up from teams and learning things from different teams. And, you know, the Chargers are not a team I'm really, you know, stealing ideas from. The Redskins, of course, have new management now, but I never was really, you know, trying to figure out what they were doing and seeing if I could copy it. I guess those are a couple I could throw out there.
Brad Spielberger, Pro Football Focus, OverTheCap.com. Follow him on Twitter, at BradOTC. Brad, I appreciate the information, as always.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. You have a great rest of your night.
You do the same. That was great stuff there from Brad Spielberger. He is not in on the Bears, what they did, how they handled the quarterback position. Now, he did say for 2020, and maybe that's how the Bears are looking at this, that he can be the best option. He can perform the best of all the names that have been signed or traded this past offseason. Just not a fan of the process, and I certainly agree with him there. And we can both sit here and understand what the Bears are doing, but it doesn't mean we have to really agree with it. But they are really dug in on this 1 year. For their sake, I hope they get that 1 year. Because, man, they are putting everything into this 2020 season. Joe Ostrowski here, Sports Radio 670. The Score at 820. We got the early odds segment tonight. Our guest is Dan Lifschatz from 98.5, the Sports Hub. The man knows a lot about sports betting, and I want to get his thoughts on Cam Newton to the Patriots. Odds are moving, so that will be a fun conversation. And a little bit more on Cam Newton coming up next. Joe Osho, 670, The Score, on the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.